This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. This is Chris Gunty of the Catholic Review, and today we are at the Catholic Media Convention in Phoenix, Arizona, and we're talking to movie director Sean McNamara. Sean is an American director, writer, and producer of family dramas, including the breakout hit features, you've probably seen them, Soul Surfer, Reagan, The Miracle Season. He's done a lot of different things, A Wing and a Prayer. We talked to Roma Downey and the real-life pilot who went through that on this show a little bit earlier. But he's been doing a lot of different films. Just this year is celebrating the 27th anniversary of Wookwell McNamara Entertainment that he co-founded in 1998. Together, they produced 45 feature films for Paramount Pictures, Republic Pictures, Sony, TriStar, a bunch of the names you know. He's got a new movie coming out, and we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show. But at first, Sean, welcome to the show. First, we want to thank you for being here.
Oh, Chris, thank you for having me. This is an honor.
You know, we look at movies like Soul Surfer, like On a Wing and a Prayer, where it's just normal stories based on true life events of people who are in difficult situations and who use their faith to keep them grounded and bring them through. What makes that attractive for you?
Well, I think I grew up loving movies, and one of the movies I loved watching was Rocky. So anything inspirational gets me. I don't know, you know, when I was young and I saw that movie, the next day I found myself jogging. I didn't want to be a boxer or anything, but I just was inspired by Rocky Balboa running down the street, listening to the music. So as I went through my career, I grew up a Catholic, and I completely loved going to the movies. I loved seeing Jesus Christ Superstar at the Cinerama Dome, Apocalypse Now, Earthquake. I mean, I was just somebody who loved movies, loved inspirational movies. And so I started in television, did a lot of television show for like Disney and Nickelodeon. And at one point, the book for Soul Surfer ended up in my hands. Bethany Hamilton's manager was walking on the beach when I was shooting a TV series there called Beyond the Break. And I read this book, and I thought this would be a great movie.
Sure.
And I'm inspired. Here's a 13-year-old girl who lost her arm, and she goes back into the waves and surfs again. Like, I would never go back in the water again. And
no.
I'm a surfer.
No.
And I love surfing. But I was like, wow, there is something about the passion of this young woman who, no matter what adversity she's up against, she will go back and fight to achieve her dreams. And she did. So when I did that movie, and I had to learn about what a faith-based movie is or a faith-adjacent movie.
Right.
And it was new to me because I was always thinking with movies you can do anything. And I was working with Rich Peluso over at Affirm Films at Sony. And he was saying, you know, the Christian market is a very narrow market. It's very deep if you hit it right, but it's very narrow. And I'm saying, but I want to get the mainstream market and hit the Christians at the same time. And he goes, you know, a lot of times people fail trying to do that because of things. But what I did is I learned what would work for both audiences, because I think I like all movies. I think Christians likes all movies. So let's figure a way to get those things in there. So from that movie forward, I started going for inspirational movies, faith-adjacent movies. I don't like to knock people over the head.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think we see some of these faith-based movies, and they're so preachy.
Yeah.
I mean, you get 5 minutes in, and it's like, okay, I got the message. I'm done. I can hit pause, and I'm done. I think what some of the movies that we've been talking about and the other faith-based movies that are, as you say, faith-adjacent, there's an element of faith to them. It makes it a little bit more real for people, don't you think?
Absolutely. Well, and a lot of the stories I tell are true stories. So it's we don't, like, add much to it. It's just that movie. Like with Miracle Season, for example, You know, that's a movie about, you know, a young girl who lost her life when she was young in high school at a volleyball team, and then her mother passed away 2 weeks later. So this family was devastated. And the father was like a spine surgeon. I mean, he explained, like, when he would operate on somebody's spines, it was like a cantaloupe inside, like that sort of mastery. And she broke her spine when she was in that crash. And so you sit there and you go, how do you come back from that? How do you come back and be a part of society that actually, you know, does something? And Ernie Found did it, and it was very difficult. In fact, one of the things Ernie did, when I make my movies, I always have the real people come to the set. Like, for example, on Soul Surfer, Helen Hunt and Dennis Quaid were in the church with Carrie Underwood. I had the real Sherry Hamilton and Tom Hamilton sit right behind them. Mm-hmm. So same thing with Miracle Season. We brought Ernie Found, the father, out, and he was on the set, comes in. He's lost his daughter 5 years ago, and here are all these young girls in the same outfits, the same uniforms, and he saw number 9, Caroline, his daughter, the actress.
Wow.
And he went and he hugged her for like 10 minutes straight. We all just got quiet and just watched this happen in the hallway at a high school. So I just think stories of the heart start, you know, stories of redemption, stories of people, you know, being able to come back from a huge loss, fight, and come back and be able to go on with life, spread the word, I think is the type of movies that I just love to do.
Mm-hmm. When you look at some of these kinds of stories, and you and I were both, you know, born Catholic, part of this, we're part of the media world, so we hear a lot of these stories from people. We tell their stories in a lot of ways. As I say it, it's a lot of ways to show people the face of Jesus, you know, through these people. But one of the things that comes through a lot in what you're making is how a person's faith is the thing that carries them through. Because I think we see a lot of things out there, and I've been watching, you know, we watch a lot of TV, a lot of Netflix and all these kinds of series. And I was telling Sister Rose Picotti, I said, you know, I see these things, and there's not a single likable character in this cast, you know. And it's like, but these kinds of stories are based a little bit differently because they're people who want to see more. They want to see beyond. And they're going through adversity. They're going through tough times. But the faith is the thing that brings them through. When you talk to actors and other people who are helping you produce, do you look for people who have lives of faith, or do they gravitate to these kinds of projects because they share that vision? Maybe not all the same denomination, but they're all sharing this. There is something higher than us, and we want to aspire to it.
Well, luckily, I think I've been blessed to have people on my films that are of faith. And the interesting thing, they could be of different faiths. I've had everyone from Catholics, Christian, Lutherans, Jews, Islam. I mean, they all come together to make the films because we are a people and we all celebrate the same things. We celebrate the good times, and, you know, when there's loss, we are sorry. And but I find the people who make films who are passionate about making their art. I mean, I'm a director. I always say I'm a jack of all trades, a master of none. I work with the masters of the props and the cinematography. These guys know what they're doing. So when they get that script, they bring their love to that project. If it's right. going to be the way they paint with light, if they're the gaffer, they're the way they're going to dress the characters. They do research and they get into it, and they really are passionate about it. So on every film I have some that are more Christian, Catholic, or it's all different types of people, but they all are passionate about the work.
Mm-hmm. What do you like most about doing these kinds of films?
Well,
other than getting them finished and out to the distributor.
Well, first of all, any film that gets made is a miracle. And I actually look at it that way because it's hard to make a movie.
Yeah.
When you have to raise the money, when you have to find the script, when you have to bring the actors together, so many things have to go right. And that's why I believe it's a miracle, because tens of thousands of things go wrong.
Sure.
But enough go right, and then you have a movie. And I love every part of it. I love the prep because I get to go around and figure out how to do it, who to cast, how to get the script to sing. I love the shooting because every day you come to the set and you're making magic. I mean, you don't know exactly how it's going to go. You bring all these actors who don't know each other onto this location. You know, you do as much homework as you can, but you bring them together. And then I remember when I was a kid, I used to be sitting home and I'd watch Gilligan's Island or Get Smart and Star Trek, and my mom would go, "What are you doing? You have to go do your homework. Like, how can you do just watch TV all day?" And then I think about that sometimes. I go, my whole career now is sitting in front of a monitor and watching people do their stuff, making magic in front of me, and they're doing the work. I just adjust it, make sure it like is in focus and so forth, and then I kind of put it together and post with these talented editors. And that's how I just love what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And really, when you go back to that, you were probably getting ideas from Gilligan's Island and Star Trek and all of those things as you went along.
And plus, all the movies is in my library. I'll say, this is a Spielberg shot where we kind of dolly into the face,
which
he got it from Hitchcock, and it all came from somewhere. So I started studying the old films, like in the early 1900s, the 1920s, the 1930s. I mean, those were the artists who were figuring out the medium. Can you imagine? Like, first of all, they used to shoot things wide, like a play.
Right.
And then the first time an audience saw a close-up of somebody's head, they all screamed in the theater. They thought the person's head was cut off.
Yeah.
And to think they were starting to go, if we put these two images together, if we montage, it could tell a different story.
Right.
So when I think of the creativity that was there, it's amazing. But then I noticed in the 80s when they did music videos, this new wave of like creativity, anything was possible. You put images together, sound and all of that stuff. It's happening again with AI now. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who can write down a prompt can come up with a vision in their head, and they don't need to have millions of dollars like we had to do to make movies.
Right.
They can come up with a vision. When you were an artist, you could paint a picture by yourself. A songwriter, you could write a song by yourself. A writer, you could write a book. But a filmmaker needed a lot of people around them that all, in order to make it look halfway decent, cost a lot of money. So I think AI as a tool coming into the marketplace is going to make the real artist and filmmaker emerge.
Yeah. And although I'd rather have AI do my laundry than do my writing, but I imagine you would like prefer that too. But
absolutely, I mean, what did they sell? Tesla's now selling like robots who will do your laundry and vacuum your floors, and I'm like, that doesn't look so bad.
Not a bad idea. Well, after the break, we're going to talk some more with Sean McNamara, movie director, about a new project of his that's coming out about World War II, and there's an interesting story behind this, and we're not going to give too much away, but it is an incredible story of hope and redemption. This is Chris Gunty of the Catholic Review, and you're listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Have a burning question about the Catholic Church? Curious about faith, traditions, current issues, or ways of deepening your spiritual life? Now's your chance to ask a bishop. Call in to Catholic Review Radio and leave a recording of yourself asking a question for our special guest, Baltimore Auxiliary Bishop Adam J. Parker. Whether it's about the sacraments, church teaching, or everyday faith, no question is too big or too small. Your question may be featured on an upcoming episode of Catholic Review Radio with Bishop Parker. Dial 443-263-0230 now to ask your question. Don't miss out, your voice matters. Again, that's 443-263-0230. And be on the lookout for our special Ask a Bishop episode coming soon.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Baltimore Archbishop William E. Lurie visited several sites in the Holy Lands in early September as part of a visit with the Catholic Near East Welfare Association Pontifical Mission and the Knights of Columbus. Quote, "What you see in that even in a time of great darkness and suffering, the light and the goodness and the glory of Christ shines through in these ministries," unquote, Archbishop Lurie said upon returning to Baltimore. The Archbishop traveled with Monsignor Peter Vaccari, president of CNEWA, and Patrick Kelly, Supreme Knight of the Knights of Columbus. The Archbishop is also Supreme Chaplain of the Knights of Columbus and Vice President of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Archbishop Lurie noted that the Knights have supported the Church in the Holy Lands for many years, but that they wanted to learn from CNEWA, which has been serving the area for almost a century. The group visited a home for abandoned children and babies, schools, parishes, and a home for the elderly. Next, in Baltimore, St. Leo the Great Parish in Little Italy hosted a Mass, Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, and a dinner to celebrate the Church's two newest saints, both Italians. The September 6th events preceded the canonizations, September 7th, of Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis. Saints Frassati and Acutis are being hailed as examples how young people can dedicate their lives to Christ. Frassati was a rock climber who died in 1925 at age 24. Acutis, a computer whiz who built a website dedicated to Eucharistic miracles, died at age 15 in 2006. For more on these and other stories, visit CatholicReview.org. For everyone at Catholic Review Media, I'm Kevin Parks.
This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. We are talking with Sean McNamara, movie director and producer and writer, and there's a project that you are premiering here at the Catholic Media Convocation in Phoenix called Bow, Artist at War. An incredible movie. Thank you for sending me a screener in advance so that I could see it before we talk about this. The movie screening is going to be tomorrow morning as we speak. But this is a movie that you would not think would be a fun movie or a happy ending movie. This is, give us a little bit of a synopsis of Bow, Artist at War.
Sure. Well, a few years ago, some friends of mine introduced me to Deborah Schmierchnik, and she had found the daughters of a couple who met at Plaszow. And you saw them in the movie Schindler's List. And they actually got married in the Plaszow barracks. And it's this story about Joseph Bow, who was a forger, and he helped save literally thousands of Jews and helped them get out of Poland, you know, during the war. And what struck me was that a love story could have existed in that time.
Absolutely. It boggled my mind.
Because they were all separated. Men and women were separated. Like, how could they have pulled it off? And you never think of a love story when you think of that story. You think, oh, the prisoners, this was the most terrible life, and it was harsh. But what I discovered, especially from his daughters, Selila and Hadassah, that his father was a prankster and a joker, and he would make jokes. Even in the worst circumstances, he could see hope. He could see light. And that uplifted people. And those were the people who were survived. I've met a lot of survivors since making the movie. And it was the ones who could still laugh and still had hope. And those are the ones who survived because, my God, to live through the worst disaster in human history, I just don't know how they did it. But again, an inspiring movie about people who go beyond what is necessary and literally save thousands of Jews during the Holocaust.
You've done some interesting things. It's told in the contemporary day of the 1970s when Bow himself was older, and much of the movie, though, is looking back to the concentration camp. You're in color in the 70s, in black and white, and very lovely sepia tones during the war years. Why did you make that choice? I see you shaking your head. That's got to be conscious, obviously, to do it that way.
Well, it was interesting. Some of the decisions were made in post. So what happened at Plaszow, I probably understand why Spielberg probably shot in black and white also, because we remember that time of the world, like from the old movies that were made in the 40s in black and white and so forth. And the prison garb was blue and white. It was almost like clownish, happy colors.
Right.
And I remember when we shot it in color, and I kept looking at it, and I go, gosh, there's something off about this movie. It looks, I don't want to say too happy, but just it didn't look like what I remember 1940s, Poland would have looked like.
Right.
And so one day in editing, I just asked Greg Hobson, my editor, I go, would you just flip it to black and white, because I look to these guys, they can do anything, and they flip a switch, and poof, it all goes black and white, and I'm watching a scene, and all of a sudden, the picture started to sing. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I don't know if we're going to actually do this, but now let's do the whole film and test it. And then we thought, okay, let's get artsy with it, because he's an artist. He makes paintings, and I said, why don't we make, in the 70s, as life had come back, let's make that in sort of the 70s Kodachrome look, color.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then when they were in the ghetto, that was the sepia tone you were talking, the colors being drained out. And then when they go to the concentration camp, it goes full black and white. So we just did that to say, this is kind of how life was. They were in color, they lost the color, and then it went black and white in the worst days. And when mm-hmm. they came back out in the 70s, the color had re-entered their lives. And that was the creative reason why we did that. And the fact that I love this movie is because we're all artists, If you are a writer, a director, an actor, you were trying to put your art up onto the screen, and he did it through drawings and paintings. And I went to Israel, where his museum was, and they still have his office, and his drawings are still on the wall. So I took pictures of that so we could build a set identically
That's
to
very
that.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
And I just it oozed out of him. I can't explain the amount of art he did, but he had so much art, and it was so good, and it was very stylistic. And, in fact, for the festival circuit we took it on, I used one of his pieces of art of them doing the tango, and it was just a great way to display what Joseph Bau did as an artist.
Yeah. It is not a happy movie, necessarily. But because of Joseph's humor, there are very light elements in this. And it was very surprising to see that, because you've got this movie that's in black and white, these scenes that are in black and white, and yet there's these just beautiful moments of lightness. And you see that both in the vision on the screen, but also in the script, in the smile. I mean, he smiles very often. Rebecca smiles very often.
They were in love.
They were in love. And in the most improbable place.
Yeah. And so I think, and that was part of what he was about. He was in love, and he could somehow shut off the horrible parts of it. And I saw it when I was younger, A Beautiful Life. And it was another movie about the Holocaust where we found somebody and there was a humorous tone to it. And I got to tell you, while we were making it, we had to find that fine line of going, we don't want to make it like funny. It's not like Hogan's Heroes by any means, because there is tragic events that happen in it. But what we were trying to do was show how Joseph Bau used his humor, which he had before the war. He was a prankster. He was a joker. He made people laugh. How he kept that going when he was in the concentration camp. And because of that, they kind of thought he was a clown, so they weren't paying his job was a map maker. So the thing that kept him alive the longest was he could draw maps and do signage all over the camps, and the Germans loved that. They were like, okay, we need somebody to draw the map so we know where everybody is. But that was his cover for then, quietly redoing people's passports from people who had passed and getting them snuck out of Poland.
Yeah, and what I found amazing in this is that the actors just do an incredible job of this. I mean, they really bring that whole thing to life. But there are some incredibly tragic elements in this, in almost frightening parts of it. And yet, this redemption just is throughout the whole thing. And now, we were talking before the break about, faith-adjacent movies and Christian and Catholic. And this is a very clearly Jewish movie. I mean, it's very clearly based in the Jewish religion and in the tragedies that were inflicted upon Jews in Poland. How do you find redemption in these kinds of terrible things?
Well, first of all, you had mentioned something, the actors. Emil Hirsch and Imbar Lavi star as Joseph and Rebecca Bau. And part of my job is made 10 times easier by getting these talented actors that breathe life into these characters who passed away, actually in the 90s. They're actually in Schindler's List. Both of them, are in Schindler's List. And I'm talking like in the 90s when that was made. Mm-hmm. So I look for stories where actors breathe life into these characters, and they literally, because they believed in something, and they risked their lives at this. So these the real people did something that was important. All we tried to do was tell their story and reflect it back so modern audiences could see that and see that. And again, since I make stories of people who come back from a loss and go on and have faith, this story, this is where I'm saying faith movies, faith adjacent, it doesn't matter if it's Christian, Catholic, Jewish, Buddhist, Islam. These are all stories of faith, and I'm trying to explore all of them in my lifetime.
This is right in your wheelhouse, then, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you love about this movie without giving it away?
Oh, my gosh. I just love Joseph and Rebecca Bau. I love their love relationship. They were young when they fell in love with each other, and I am just so so pleased to actually watch these incredible actors bring it back to life, bring it back with humor, because it's easier to watch then. Because otherwise, like, even when I was making the films, a lot of people go, you don't want to make a Holocaust film. Nobody wants to watch. Nobody wants to be that sad. And I go, I understand that. And it's funny because I had to rewatch Schindler's List, one of the most genius movies ever. But when you watch it, there's huge amounts of humor in there. That's how you're able to watch huge amounts of sorrow, by getting a laugh to release the anxiety as you're watching these movies. So I definitely studied Spielberg and how he pulled it off. And this, since our characters live in Spielberg's world, I studied Schindler's List a lot and learned from him how to tell this story.
How are people going to be able to see this movie, and when?
3 months from today, on September 26th, it will be in theaters nationwide. It's coming out from Paramount, Republic Pictures, and Showbiz Direct. I just did a movie that came out last year called Reagan. So Showbiz Direct is the team that put it out theatrically. It'll be across America. It'll be all around the world through Paramount, Canada. So just remember the date, September 26th, 2025.
And where can people find out more information about the movie?
You can go to all the social medias, Instagram, Bao Artist at War, IMDb. It's everywhere right now.
Okay.
And we've got trailers and we've got stories behind the scenes. There's a book that this was based on. It was called Dear God, Have You Ever Gone Hungry? The English translation. And then we have that, and we've changed it to Bao Artist at War to come out simultaneously with the movie. And we have the actual documentary we made simultaneously of the real people.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible operation to do.
It was a big operation.
It is a fantastic movie, and I thank you for sharing it with us, and thank you for talking with us today.
Oh, Chris, thank you for having me.
Thanks. We've been talking with Sean McNamara, director and writer of Bao, Artist at War, which will be in theaters near you September 26th. This is Chris Gunty of the Catholic Review. Thank you, Sean, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening this week. Tune in next week.
The Catholic Review is the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full-time. Pick up the monthly magazine at your parish or have it delivered to your home. Subscribe to our e-newsletter for twice-weekly updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Read it today in print or online at catholicreview.org. That's catholicreview.org.
Tune in to Catholic Review Radio next week, available on WMET 1160 AM and 103.1 FM, also WSJF 92.7 FM in the Sykesville area, and WVTO 92.7 FM in Baltimore City. Check us out on SoundCloud or your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother, as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.